You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable, where we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines around our state this week. Joining me live in studio today are Rebecca Boone with Associated Press of Idaho, Matt Gillum with our own Boise State Public Radio, and Melissa Davlin with Idaho Public Television. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Hello.
Okay, Matt's on the other side of the mic today. This is kind of fun.
This is so strange.
It's so bizarre. But we're not going to start with you. We're not going to put you on the hot seat right away. We're going to start with you, Rebecca. Talk to me about the lawsuit that it was. Was it just dismissed over Idaho's abortion complication reporting requirement?
Yes. Yeah, so the abortion complication reporting requirement was something enacted by the legislature last year. And it was basically a list of medical conditions or problems that lawmakers felt could be directly or indirectly tied to having an abortion at some point. And now medical experts disagreed with some of these. And they also said that some of them were actually just part of the process of having an abortion, like bleeding or blood clots.
Or having a baby.
Right. 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 All of those things happen whenever we, as women, let things out of that
area. That just happens.
That just goes
with
the territory. So they enacted this rule. They said they wanted to, the lawmakers who were in favor of it said, you know, look, we want to track these and this and see if there's health condition, you know, health things that we should be taking into account when we look at abortion. And so all of the doctors and people who do abortion type procedures or services were required to report all of these things to the state.
To report the complications.
What lawmakers deemed
so-called
as complications.
Okay.
To the state so that the state could then put together like a big annual report saying, you know, like kind of a statistical analysis of it all. Well, Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest and the Hawaiian Islands sued. And they said, look, this is unconstitutionally vague. You can't, you know, some of the like sleep apnea, you know, could have been or sleep disorders could have been one of the complications on the list. Breast cancer. And it also said direct and indirectly as a result of abortions. Right. So they said that's just too vague. You can't. That's not constitutional. There's no way to enact it. Providers won't know how to even do it. Judge Nye, the federal court last year, said, you know, it looks like they might win this case, but I'm not going to put the law on hold while this goes forward. Well, legislature took that to heart and said, oh, it looks like they might win this case, so we probably better make some tweaks. So this session they did. They primarily changed it to be more specific. So instead of saying that the complications could be an indirect result of an abortion, they said that the medical issues were reportable if a medical practitioner believed they were an abnormal event caused by the abortion itself. So that doesn't change the debate over whether these are, in fact, actually abortion complications, but it does clarify the law enough that Planned Parenthood and the state both agreed to drop the case. So it was dismissed formally in court this week.
But a law has not been put into place regarding this at this point.
So actually, the legislature did change the law and passed it this year.
Okay, so that's where it's at.
That's
right
where
now.
It's at. So there is an abortion complication reporting law in Idaho. It's now more narrowly written to be specific.
But this information is going to be collected and compiled into a report?
Yes.
Okay.
And it includes things like breast cancer that you might get years after
having an abortion.
Having an abortion. And that medical experts say is entirely unrelated to whether or not a woman has had an abortion.
Just FYI, what medical doctors say. Melissa, let's bring you into the conversation because you've done some reporting and we've talked about it here on the program, our maternal mortality rates, not just across the United States, but in Idaho specifically. And we know that there are disparity among race and nationwide, a lot of it has been about African-American women, correct?
Right. This past week, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention out of Atlanta released a report that looked at these maternal mortality rates nationwide and found that Black mothers die at a rate 3.3 times higher than white women. And American Indian and Alaskan Native women die at a rate that's 2.5 times greater. So that lines up with everything that we knew going into this week. The dismal thing is that it doesn't seem to be getting any better. Last year, last winter, after going to a briefing at the CDC on this very issue, I requested information on Idaho's maternal mortality rates. and found that our racial disparities are very similar to what we see nationwide. And so I got numbers for, I think it was a 10-year span.
Mm-hmm.
And non-Hispanic white women had a death rate among women who were pregnant or were pregnant a year before they died. They had a rate of 2.4 deaths per 100,000 women. Non-Hispanic black women had a rate of 7.3. So wow. Almost three times as much in Idaho. And American Indian women had a death rate that was 6 per 100,000 women. So we're talking in both of those cases about women of color who are dying mm-hmm. more than twice as often as white women here in Idaho. And those are just the ones that we know about because right. remember, until this year, we didn't have a maternal mortality review panel. We have one that is being established because of legislation that was passed this past legislative session in 2019. But in all of Idaho's 44 counties, there is no one uniform way to track or record these deaths. So coroners can check them off,
mm-hmm.
but it's not a standardized way of recording these. And so these are the deaths among pregnant women and recently pregnant women that we know about. And the racial disparities are there in Idaho, just like they are nationwide. So I asked about other causes of death among mm-hmm. women, and American Indian women have very, very high rates in other categories, too. What really stood out to me was drug overdoses. They were about on par with white women. That was one where Hispanic women were actually very, very low when it came to drug overdose rates mm-hmm. from 2015 to 2017. But white women, black women, and American Indian women are dying at a much higher rate.
This is just sobering information.
It's very dismal.
Right.
The one that stood out to me most of all, though, was suicide deaths. So, again, from 2015 to 2017, there were 233 recorded suicide deaths among Idaho women. So, again, we're talking the rate per 100,000 mm-hmm. women who died. For non-Hispanic white women, it was 10, a rate of 10. For American Indian women, it was 21.4. So again, more than twice as much. And so it's a dismal statistic. And again, those are the ones that we know about. It's almost certainly underreported for both drug overdoses right. and for suicide rates because of the way coroners record this information.
So now that we have this basically a review panel that is being put together, will this delve into that potentially? Because my understanding was this will just start gathering data.
Right. But if you don't have the information
right.
as to who is dying and where and how, then you can't do things to address this. So what this maternal mortality review panel will do is collect as much information as they can and then make recommendations mm-hmm. based on that information. Because right now we're just kind of, trying to feel our way through this in mm-hmm. the dark. Idaho was one of two states that didn't have
right.
a panel, a review panel, nor any plans to make one. Mm-hmm. And so we're at the back of the pack. When I was at the briefing at the CDC, they made it clear that one death is too many.
Right.
Right. And we're having way more than one death. We have one of the highest rates mm-hmm. among pregnant women or recently pregnant women in the country.
And we should note that this is a problem nationwide. This is right. something for an industrialized country. We have one of the highest mortality rates for pregnant women. But then you can look at the state of California and what they have done. And people can complain about California as much as they want. But when it comes to what they have done, when it comes to maternal mortality rates, those numbers have gone down astronomically over the last decade because they put these review board in place and have changed best practices.
Right. But we still have a major problem nationwide. We have the worst
right.
rate of maternal deaths in the developed world. There are developing countries that have much better mm-hmm. rates than we do. I was recently at a healthcare journalism conference in Baltimore, and we heard from a physician who said, honestly, this is one of the reasons why the U.S. is kind of the laughingstock in the international medical community. I go to conferences and they ask us two things. Why is your maternal mortality rate so high? And why aren't people getting vaccinated? Why aren't people vaccinating their kids? Those are the two big things.
Right. Speaking of vaccinations, we talked about this on the show yesterday about the measles outbreak in the United States and the fact that we have not yet had a case in Idaho. But Melissa, get us updated on some information that you found out about.
So according to the Twin Falls Times News, yesterday afternoon, the South Central Public Health District announced that about 50 people from Gooding were exposed to measles in April while they were traveling together in Seattle. All 50-ish of those people have been checked out. Mm-hmm. They are not currently showing signs of the disease, but sometimes it takes a while for measles to appear. And so they're continuing to monitor this group. But it just kind of goes to show that, again, we are surrounded by states that have had measles outbreaks and measles instances. And at this point, is it just a matter of time? It mm-hmm. kind of sounds like it.
Mm-hmm. I want to shift gears some. And Matt, I want to bring you more into the conversation. And there are some, should we say, some issues, some controversy going on with some school mascots around the state of Idaho.
We have some problematic mascots around the state, but the one that's now sort of back in the headlines is the Teton High School, the Redskins there. On Monday, 10 freshmen at that school walked out of class in Driggs to rally in support of the Redskin mascot. They say that it's not problematic because it's not being used in a negative way. They say that it's part of the town's heritage, and that as they sort of take ownership and proudly identify as such, then that is they're using it to build themselves up and as a positive image as opposed to some sort of like slur or epithet. Whereas, you know, we look at the national stage and the Washington mm-hmm. Redskins, they some sports broadcasters won't even say the team name now. So problematic is the word here.
And we've seen this issue in other parts of the state as well. Correct, Melissa?
Absolutely. I mean, as Matt mentioned, this is far from the only school that uses American Indian caricatures as mascots. And that's essentially what it is. I've been to a number of Council on Indian Affairs legislative meetings, and this has come up a couple times. One thing to note is that the five different federally recognized tribes in Idaho do have slightly different views on this. But mm-hmm. overall, the vast majority, not just in Idaho, but nationwide, think that these are caricatures. And one thing that stands out to me about the protests that Matt mentioned is that, you know what, if people of color are telling you that they're bothered by something and white people are trying to shout them down and say, you know what, no, this isn't problematic. This is part of our heritage. Maybe you should listen to the people of color who are telling you it's problematic.
Mm-hmm. And Matt, you contacted, I mean, because one of the largest schools in the state is the Boise High School Braves. And we do know that they had a big mural and a few years ago they covered that up, but their mascot is still the Braves. So you contacted the school district.
Reached out, asked about it, have not heard back, but mm-hmm. made an email. I just want to say about this thing at Teton High. I mean, this is not the first time it's come up. In June of 2013, the district superintendent unilaterally said, we're doing away with this. We're getting rid of it. We're going to erase all traces of it. And he got a lot of blowback. That campaign lasted 2 months. And then he just said, we're going to address it in the future. And now in July, the school board is going to be having a conversation about it. So it's coming back up, and this controversy sort of highlighted the fact that, you know, brace yourself if you're in Driggs, because I think it's going to be a rather contentious mm-hmm. event.
Mm-hmm. And Rebecca, there are other mascots
right
out there that are, I mean, fairly shocking, actually.
Yeah. And actually, the Salmon River High School Salmon River? Now I've got to double check my notes. But yeah, Salmon River High School, which I think is in Riggins, was threatened with a lawsuit by some of the parents of their Native American students because their mascot was the Savages. And their the logo they used for it was depicted a Native American person. Mm-hmm. And so they actually were threatened with a lawsuit. Nobody wanted to change the name, apparently, I think there was mixed opinions. But they ultimately decided to keep the name Savages, but they changed the logo to two white people, a warrior woman and a man, sort of depicted. And that apparently settled the issue there. But a little further north, there's the Orofino High School, which has long been the Maniacs. And their logo is actually of a screaming, jumping person in a hospital gown.
And the reason why we should note this is because
State Hospital North, which is one of the state's mental hospitals, is in Orofino, just a short distance away from the high school.
And there we have it. It is fascinating that in this day and age, we are still having this conversation, though, about mascots. And I think it goes back to exactly what you said, Melissa, where it is like, if there are people of color who say that they are offended by this, or frankly, in the case of Orofino, if there is someone who has had a mental health issue and they are offended by this, maybe we should listen.
Look, it doesn't take that much to respect people. It's not that hard. And it's not that hard to change a mascot.
They say that they're part of this tradition. Like, yes, your tradition of graduating from this institution in your town, but if it's the Hawks, the salmon, the whatever, like there's, you're still part of the tradition. You just change the name.
My favorite college mascot is the banana slugs. They are fantastic.
Love it. We're continuing our Friday Reporter Roundtable. My guests today, Matt Gillum with Boise State Public Radio, Melissa Davlin with Idaho Public Television, and Rebecca Boone with the Associated Press of Idaho. And Rebecca, another lawsuit. Get us up to date on this sex offender registry.
Right. It seems like every time I come here, I'm talking about a sex offender.
You are, but that's all right.
So a group of 34 sex offenders in 2016 sued the state, saying that the sex offender registry rules, which had changed and evolved over time, mm-hmm. were basically unconstitutional because some people who had never been required to register later had their crimes reclassified as felonies or sort of stepped up mm-hmm. in severity when lawmakers, you know, go through
when they change something,
get tough on crime, or they change okay. something to better reflect the reality or whatnot. And so people who maybe didn't have to register before had to register after years of being unregistered. The rules change. You know, some people had to be like, well, sex offenders do. They have to be 500 feet from schools, mm-hmm. right? But some said, hey, we can't worship at the church of our choice because it's too close to a school. So there were all these issues that they were saying, like, these sex offender registry acts cause us, you know, are violating our constitutional rights to religion and to all sorts of things. Well, they lost. So at the federal court level, Judge Nye basically said, like, look, there's been a lot of these lawsuits in a lot of states. And basically the case law says that mm-hmm. the state can do this. Set these restrictions.
So that's
it's not necessarily double jeopardy, and it's not necessarily impairing your right to worship at the church of your choice or whatnot. So what they did now is this group of sex offenders, they've asked the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court to revive their lawsuit because they basically are appealing the judge's ruling, tossing it out. You know, the judge at the federal court level here in Idaho did actually give them a second chance to say, hey, if you can refile and show that you're actually experiencing harm that somehow outweighs the public good of a registry, then maybe we can consider the lawsuit. They refiled. And he said, nope, still doesn't meet the bar. Mm. So now this group is asking the Ninth Circuit Court to revive. It's a big stakes thing because if for some reason, if the Ninth Circuit said, yes,
if they take
you
it
can't
up.
Do this, if they take up the appeal, and then if they were to win, mm-hmm. I mean, the whole sex offender registry would be called into question. So it's kind of a high stakes issue, but it's not looking super promising at this point based on the Idaho's federal court.
And we haven't heard anything from the Ninth Circuit yet of whether they will pick this up.
Right.
Okay. Melissa, let's talk a little bit about what is going on with your request to get certain public records with Ada County.
It's going great.
Is it? Yeah.
No,
you're not getting information?
No. So
kind of to update us on,
sure.
You know, why you requested and the whole process.
So backing up about a month and a half ago, in my position as the Idaho Press Club Vice President and First Amendment Committee Chairwoman, I help reporters with public records requests and open meeting issues. And I was contacted by Cynthia Sewell of the Idaho Statesman, who was having trouble getting records she had requested from Ada County. Idaho law says that government entities have a max of 10 days to fulfill public records requests. And Cynthia didn't get hers for 45 days, which is a blatant a clear violation of Idaho's public records law. So I wrote a sternly worded letter outlining why this was problematic and against the law. And then I did an additional public records request that asked for all communications related to the fulfillment of Cynthia's public records request. Basically, I was looking for any emails or memos that might have told us what the heck was going on and why this took 45 days, more than four times the amount of time that Idaho law allows. And to be clear, there are no provisions in Idaho's law that say, like, you know, when you get around to it, or if you're having computer problems, you get an extra few days. Like, this is a priority that governments need to make, is fulfilling these public records requests. Ada County got back to me and said, to fulfill this records request, it's going to cost $42. I said, great, you know, that's pretty normal to have to pay for the time that it takes them to do public records. And when they gave me back the 175-page PDF of my records, everything was redacted except for my own emails and emails to and from Cynthia, which they knew I had already had because I referenced them extensively in my initial letter. They even redacted my own email address and contact information back to me. This is what I paid them for. I paid them to protect my privacy myself.
You know,
$42.
They're looking out for you.
Right. So I don't know if you knew this about me, but sometimes I'm kind of a pain in the butt. And so I made redaction art out of
these. If you follow Melissa on Twitter, you would have seen the picture.
Yeah, it's beautiful, I think. And I thought it would I'm trying to raise money basically to cover future public records requests. But the bigger issue here is, if this happened to me, somebody who is very familiar with the public records laws, who else is this happening to in Ada County? Who else is, you know, petitioning their government and asking for information and is either unable to pay the money to get those records fulfilled or getting all of these nonsense redacted documents back? I mean, it's a slap in the face of government transparency. Absolutely. And so.
So where are you at with this? Have you heard from the county?
I wrote a letter expressing my displeasure.
Again, sternly worded?
Sternly worded.
Melissa writing anything sternly worded?
I would never.
Shock.
Never.
I would never. And so they said that they would forward my emails to the commissioners. I know that they've gotten them. I'm hoping that I can sit down with the county and especially their legal counsel and point out why what they are doing is not lawful.
When you make that records request, that public records request for Ada County, who is in charge of, like, what office is in charge of getting you that information?
That's a really great question. Idaho law dictates that every single government entity, so whether it's your weed abatement district or the state legislature itself, everybody needs to have a designated records custodian, but Idaho law doesn't say exactly who it needs to be. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the office manager. It doesn't necessarily have to be the IT person. They just need somebody, a go-to person for this. In this case, all of my records requests were processed through an office manager, and then an attorney reviewed them. And that's pretty normal. What isn't normal is waiting 45 days to fulfill a records request or charging a citizen $42 for
their own
almost entirely redacted document.
Right.
That is not normal. And we are hoping to change that practice. The problem with Idaho public records law is that there's no recourse for people who get unlawfully denied access to records except going straight to court.
And that's a cost too, right?
And that's very expensive. Just to file the initial paperwork is like $200+. And so
that's a lot for a lot of people.
Yeah. So which is why I'm trying to take this route of publicly saying maybe Ada County needs to change its practices because a lawsuit is going to be more expensive if somebody does sue them over their lack of transparency.
One thing I want to touch on as well before we head out, Matt, this is kind of interesting. The Boise Fire Department has an issue with its rescue boat as we come into the summer months and float season.
Yeah, their swift water rescue boat had a mechanical issue on April 30th. It basically the engine failed. The current was going at 6,800 CFS in the Boise River. That's just south of flood stage. The boat was pummeled into the Broadway Bridge. One of the firefighters jumped off and made it to shore. Two of them had to be saved. And now, yes, going into summer, we don't have this boat. They are trying to decide if it's whether or not they can fix it or if they're just going to buy a new one. A new one runs $30,000 to $60,000. But let's pause. Floaters take heart. I got an email today from Scott Coburg. He's with the Ada County Parks and Waterways. They're the ones that oversee float season.
And they clear out.
Clear out the debris and all that stuff. And he says that this should not impact the float season opening. So let me take a deep breath right now.
But it could affect you being rescued if you don't know how to float yourself down the river.
Well, no, there's a plan for that. The fire department says they are going for what Char Jackson described as a shore-based perspective.
Ropes. Which they are trained on. I mean, they do know how to
She says a lot of fire departments out there, other rescue agencies, don't have a boat. We are kind of special about that.
Mm-hmm.
But a shore-based perspective is code for ropes.
It's going to be fine.
Also, the message here,
sounds great.
It's almost at flood stage. You shouldn't be in the river this time of year anyway. And a fun reminder, they can actually charge you for your own rescue if you get in the water.
Remember that. Your rescue will be less if it's ropes versus a boat.
That's an excellent point, Gemma.
Well, see?
See?
There's always a sunny side to every story.
It will cost you less if they use ropes. In fact, you should just tell them you want ropes.
As you're floating down, ropes, please, ropes.
Put the boat back.
Yeah.
Wear your life jacket.
When you see the boat,
wear your life jacket.
When you see the boat coming, just yell rope.
Please don't do any of this, people. You know, just stay out of the river.
Very quickly, we should note that Melissa Davlin, being the pain in the butt that she is, has been honored by Boise State University, great honor, with public discourse. So talk very quickly about this, Melissa, because honestly, I think it just says so much about you as a journalist.
Well, thank you. I apparently nobody who made this decision follows me on Twitter.
They probably all do.
No, honestly, it's an award from the Boise State University School of Public Service for enhancing civil discourse. And I, no kidding, this is one of the coolest honors I have ever received in my career. Previous winners include Betsy Russell and the founder the great Betsy Russell. And so to be honored and also at the same time as Karen Tucker from Janus for her commitment to Idaho Award, it is a really, really cool thing. I am incredibly humbled. All jokes aside, there's room for a little bit of snark.
I firmly believe
in civil discourse because we got to laugh about it.
Or we'll cry.
Lots of weeping.
I want to thank all of you for coming in today. My guests on our reporter roundtable are Matt Gillum with Boise State Public Radio, Melissa Davlin with Idaho Public Television, and Rebecca Boone with the Associated Press of Idaho. Thanks so much, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, Disney has taken over the box office. We talk with Boise Weekly movie critic George Prentice. I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters.